They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today, I'm excited to have Sarah Benson and Deborah Goonan. Both of these ladies have been incredible and have been working very hard. They founded an organization called the Coalition for Community Housing Policy in the Public Interest, also known as CHIPPY, and we've been working on our second annual survey of homeowners in associations. Debbie and Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sue. Thanks for having us.
I'm excited because we're doing something that's a little different than usual. We've got both of you on through the phone remotely, and so this is going to open up a bunch of doors for us. So you've worked very hard on this survey. Can you tell us a little bit about it? We want as many people as possible to respond, correct?
Absolutely. Debbie, why don't you talk about how the survey was composed, how it's different from the previous survey?
Okay. What our goal was in this survey was to address some of the most important issues that came up in our last survey, transparency and owner involvement and apathy were the two biggest concerns in our last survey. So we wanted to come up with some questions that would address what is exactly going on in associations in terms of people who are attending meetings, elections. Are they getting access to records when they request them? Those are some of the issues that we ask about. Another key issue that we are wanting to find out some information, with all the reports of theft and embezzlement and fraud, it seems to be becoming more common. We wanted to get some idea what folks are paying for assessments. And do they know, are they getting information from their associations as to who holds their bank accounts? You know, is there a reserve account? How much is in it? Different ideas like that. How much is in the reserve? Has there been any special assessments? To get an idea if people understand how their money is being spent. And how it's being managed.
So how many?
Do you want to add it to that, Sarah?
Oh, and also, does your association hold a board meeting? And how often do you attend? And have you ever run for office? Those are some of the other critical points. We're trying to get to gauge owner involvement and also what they like best about their association and what they like least about their association.
We do, again, ask, about overall satisfaction levels and different aspects of mm-hmm. their association, too, to get an idea.
So you said who holds the reserve account. Is that something that people typically don't know, or is that something that is information that is readily available? Are we finding out that it's a big dark secret? What's the deal with that?
There's quite as, you know, preliminary results, the survey's only been up for about a week, so we're trying to get more response on it, but the preliminary results show that quite a few people don't know. You know, like we asked, for example, does your association hold regular annual election meetings? About three-quarters say that they do. 15% aren't sure. They can't say, they aren't even sure if there's an annual meeting held.
And I think we're also finding out that some people do not know what a reserve account is,
right,
much less how much is in reserves or where they bank. They don't even know the name of the bank where their reserve money is. If they know what,
right,
if they know what reserve is.
Right. There's 28% answered so far that they're not sure if the association even has a reserve fund account. There's an annual budget report that is provided, and maybe 62-63% have answered that there's an annual budget report that they receive. But 23% said they did not receive an annual budget report, and another 14% aren't sure if there is an annual budget report or not. So there's a pretty big gap that we're finding in the preliminary results of people not, it's like a big black hole, you know. They're paying these assessments every month or every quarter, and, you know, they don't really know what's happening with their money.
So then before we go any further, we want everybody who lives in an HOA to be able to respond to this, correct?
Right.
Absolutely.
So how do my listeners, for instance, know where to go to find the survey? Can we put that information, make that information available to them?
Yes, I have it posted on my blog at independentamericancommunities.com. It's on as soon as you put in the address and you come up, I have it posted at the top of the page. There's actually a link that you can click on that gives a brief explanation of the survey and what we're trying to do, and then there's a link from there to get to it. And we also have a mailable link. It's been posted on several Facebook groups and on LinkedIn and in social media. We encourage some of the folks that we've sent this to share it with their network to try and get as wide and diverse a response as possible. We're not just looking for the advocates to answer this, but we want to get their friends and their family and, you know, other owners, their neighbors, owners at large, to answer these questions as well, to get a good sense for what is the general awareness on these issues, because obviously our core group of people are a little bit more savvy and educated, and we're more likely to have attended board meetings and to know what the reserve account is. But a lot of people who are what I would call owners at large may not be aware of these issues.
So there are a lot of people who listen to this show who may not be on social media or may not have access to a lot of the LinkedIn and all of these other venues where you can go and click on a thing. Can you give us a web address so that anybody sitting there listening anywhere in the world who wants to go, something that's slowly, so they can write it down while we're talking and give, I'm talking slowly because I'm giving them a chance to grab something to write on and something to write
mm-hmm.
with. So Debbie, very slowly, give us an address, a web address or somehow, whether it's your Independent American Communities or any address that you want to give?
I would suggest the Independent American Community.
I would.
Debbie, you want to give the exact web address?
Yes, it's all one word. It's a kind of a long address. It's the words Independent American Communities spelled out, all one word, INDEPENDENT, American, AMERICAN. Communities in plural, communities.com.
Okay, let's repeat that.
Independent American Communities.com.
So if you log on that, there will be a link that will take you directly to the survey, right?
If you go to independentamericancommunities.com, at the top of the page, you'll see new. Take the 2017 HOA Consumer Survey. And then when you click into that link, like I said, there's a brief, explanation of why we're doing the survey. And at the bottom, in big orange letters, click here to access the 2017 CHIPI HOA survey. If you click on that, it takes you directly to the survey.
And so how long do you think it will take to respond to this? It's not going to take all that long, is it? It's a fairly short survey.
It's, maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We'd say it's about, 8 to 12 minutes, average 10 minutes to complete the survey. It's mostly, multiple choice. You just click the button. And at the end of the survey, you have the option of providing an email or contact information, but you can remain completely anonymous.
And
information that's shared with us is not shared with anybody else, if you share an email.
So I think we've been told so many lies, so much misinformation about what HOAs are and what they do. I think one of the biggest lies is they protect property values. That needs to be debunked. But the idea is that we absolutely need to know what is going on, HOAs, from the people who live there, and not necessarily from an industry with a vested interest.
That's exactly right.
And that's the entire purpose of the survey. It's not associated with a trade group. It's not associated with any for-profit organization. It is purely for the homeowners that have lived or are currently living under an association-governed housing model.
So
right. It's also open to former owners, although most of the people will likely be current owners and residents of homeowners, condominium, and cooperative associations.
So anybody who had to pay dues and obey the rules.
Exactly.
And even those who got so fed up, sold at a loss, and moved?
Yes.
So I hear some giggling in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love these ladies. We always laugh together, so we do have a good time.
Any customer survey that's worth its salt should get some input from its former customers. Every industry does that. They'll try to contact some of their former customers and find out what went. But even in the preliminary results, probably about 95% or 94% are people who are currently living in one of these associations. But it's good to have some response from the people who, for some reason or another, no longer live in an HOA or a condominium.
And I know several people like that,
mm-hmm.
who sold and moved and tell me, never again. But we want to know why and what went wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Correct?
That's correct.
And
we do ask a few questions in that regard as well.
So hindsight gives you a different perspective than when you're right in the middle of it.
That's true.
And you look back. So I would encourage everybody, if you're a regular listener to the show and you just listen on cable, or if you just listen on, on the internet, through a number of different means, you can listen to it through the station. And I don't know how many people do that. But please, if you've lived in an association or if you live in an association, or if you know someone who lives in an association, please ask them to fill out the survey. It won't take more than 10 minutes of your time. And this is important information because, if we've got pending legislation, if we're going to be trying to make any changes, we need that information.
I think I agree entirely, and I think it's important to note that CHIPI's previous survey that was conducted in 2015 was mentioned in more than 13, maybe 15 major newspapers throughout the United States. just a few months ago, thanks to Judy Thomas and her fine work. And we are going to release the results for the 2017 survey to major media outlets across the country as well, so that we can help draw a better picture of what life is truly like when living in an association-governed community.
So how long is the survey open for?
We will be closing it in January of 2017.
So there's
time.
So you do have time, but if you're anything like me, you're going to put it on your to-do list, and your to-do list is going to get 3 miles long. Do it now. Anytime, the next 10 free minutes that you have, just...
Absolutely.
Just go and click on the link and answer the questions. I mean, we're just trying to find out what you know, how much information you get, and what's really going on in controlled America, basically. So, Debbie, you've been following all of this, and you've got the preliminary responses. What is it looking like?
What specifically are you interested in knowing? Are you
just in general?
Overall, we do ask folks to rate their level of satisfaction with regard to living in the HOA, and we look at overall experience, value for assessment dollars, transparency, and communication, and so forth and so on. And we're using a 5-point scale. Just like the industry uses a 5-point scale, from very satisfied, somewhat satisfied, neutral, somewhat dissatisfied, and very dissatisfied, with somewhat dissatisfied and very dissatisfied being number 4 and 5 on the scale. Overall experience, looking at the 4 and 5, the somewhat or very dissatisfied, and our preliminary results show already about 70%.
Oh, really?
Yes. Transparency and communication.
Hold on. Before we go on,
mm-hmm.
Now CAI, for those who don't know what CAI is, it's Community Associations Institute, seems to be doing an annual survey, yet they come up with entirely different results, don't they?
Right.
And
just
they,
the opposite.
And don't they go around saying, hey, everybody's happy, happy, happy?
That's exactly what they do.
And they go to the legislators and they say, hands off, dude, because everybody's extremely happy.
Yeah, I think
they are not representing the best interest of the owners. They are representing the best interests of for-profit property management companies and attorneys. And that's the problem. Washington and your politicians do not hear the voices of the owners,
no.
The homeowners. They only hear the voices of the for-profit companies that are taking advantage of the homeowners. And that is what SHPI is all about, is having a voice for those homeowners.
And so you're reaching out to the homeowners to find out exactly what's going on in their corner of the world, not through the lens, distorted lens, of a special interest.
Exactly. And Debbie, I don't know if you remember, but on CAI's board of directors, the vast majority are trade people.
Yeah.
How many are homeowners? 2 or 3 out of how many? 15?
Maybe 2.
Let me say something about... Go on.
2 homeowner volunteer members. And the way that the Board of Trustees is set up is there are 3 what they call committees or working groups, and there is a volunteer community association volunteer committee, but there's also one for the managers and another one for other service providers. And in the end, you know, there's only at the most two votes on the Board of Trustees for any decision making or any policy making decisions that are coming from these homeowner volunteers. And obviously, out of the three, you know, working groups or committees that they have reporting to the Board of Trustees, it would be the group that has the least amount of influence.
Well,
the group that has the homeowner volunteers.
When I first learned how to turn on my computer and the internet started coming along and there were emails, and I mean, it was a whole different world than it is now. I got to converse with some of these homeowner volunteers on some of these boards. And let me tell you, these people were even more CAI than CAI ever thought of being. These were rabid, absolutely rabid industry professionals. They may not have had a paying job, or if they did, it was on the QT. They may have been a manager. They may have been working for CAI. I don't know. But they were there as the homeowner. And they were vicious. They really and truly were vicious. So anybody who says, hey, I'm just the homeowner and I'm not on, you know, I have to wonder. I don't know the current crop of people, but I do know the old crop.
If you look at, look through it a little bit carefully, but there are criteria for how you can become a member of the Board of Trustees and be on that homeowner volunteer committee for CAI. And it turns out that the only way you can do it is you, A, have to be a paid member of CAI, and B, you had to have been active in your local chapter, your local community associations institute chapter for so many years, and you should have served on a board at one time or another, if not currently. So, you know, they're not getting representation from homeowners at large. They're getting representation from somebody who's been on a board and has been active in their local community associations institute chapter. And if you went down the rabbit hole a little further and looked at the professional background of the people who are, you know, eventually getting onto the Board of Trustees, they may also have business interests either in real estate or some other related industry. It could be accounting, could be as an attorney. We just don't know that information because that's not provided to us, in that much detail. But, you know, obviously folks who are professionals are also homeowners who may happen to live and lead their HOA. That doesn't mean they're necessarily representing the interests of homeowners at large who never have or never will serve on the board of directors.
No, and that's a point that needs to be made, because CAI is going to say, oh, well, we've got homeowners on here. I know that when the Common Interest Community Board was erected or founded or started in Virginia, the battle we had, because they didn't want homeowners on there. We managed to get two homeowners, not that it was any big deal, because the homeowners who were picked were handpicked. They were cherry-picked by the people that they liked and the people who thought like them and who would do what they said. Not someone who had a completely different point of view, not someone who had more of a consumer advocacy point of view, because we did try to get people like that on the board, and they were just totally nixed because CAI controls that board.
Right.
And it's totally one-sided. I mean, Chippy's the only group that I know. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of groups who are doing a lot of really good stuff throughout the country in their states. But I think Chippy's the only group who's actually looking at this not from a perspective of someone who has a vested interest, that truly want to know what is happening.
Right. And that's the entire purpose of Chippy. We need a centralized, focused effort to have reform and
association governed communities, and we need another voice that the media and the politicians can hear that's not CAI related. And now is the time for owners to have a voice. And that is what the survey is all about. So we really want to get as many responses as we possibly can to get an accurate and a true picture of what is going on in the heart of the home where people live mm-hmm. under these associations.
I think I like the heart of the home. I like that because I'm sure all of you have, both of you have heard from homeowners who are just absolutely terrified. They're in their homes and they're afraid of answering the door. They're afraid of answering the phone. They're afraid of getting the mail. They're just absolutely terrified.
They are afraid of walking down their own streets in many cases.
And they have to have people come and help them get out.
Mm-hmm.
And get into the car because they're so terrified of being abused.
Yeah, I talk to some owners that tell me that, you know, if they go out to walk the dog or to get the mail or something like that, they are sometimes harassed by their neighbors. And so they avoid going out, or at least try not to go out of the house where anybody would be, you know, around or awake or keeping a watchful eye on them. And I've heard people tell me that, you know, they'll look out in the window of their house and they'll find the property manager or somebody is standing there in their yard or parked in the car in front of their house, like taking pictures. You know,
and measuring the grass.
Measuring the grass, measuring the crack in the driveway. I think you had a guest on that said, you know, since they were actually measuring the crack in her driveway.
Yeah.
I mean, it just can just get really out of hand.
Well, it gets so petty and so incredibly stupid and so expensive. I've had people tell me that they've, you know, there's been an attempt to run them over with a car. I've heard that more than once from more people mm-hmm. across the country. It's not just one person in one HOA, mm-hmm. so they're doing this. And so what's the common denominator? Who is it who's telling them, hey, get in your car and go run these people over?
Well, and that's just it. It's, you know, they would have you believe that this is an isolated incident, and, it's a rare occasion. And the fact is that once an owner has been identified as a troublemaker because they ask too many questions. They want to know how much money is in the bank. They want to know where the bank account is held. They want to know what is going on with the roofing job. Once they start to ask questions, they're singled out and they're targeted. They have literally a target on their back. And there is nothing that can stop the unchecked power of an attorney and a property management firm against that homeowner. So it's not an isolated incident. Shu, you're the one that told me, and I was so shocked I couldn't speak. You're the one that told me about a management company that said they would manage the association without charge as long as they could collect all the fines and fees. Is that correct?
That happened in Texas, and yeah, it was the bounty. And these management companies would go to associations that didn't have management companies and offer to take over. Dear board members, you got a life. You've got enough to do. We're professionals. You don't have to pay us. We'll get paid through fines and other fees, so don't worry about it. Just turn it over to us.
And that is that business model alone, which I think is, it's very prevalent in some states and in some communities where they use fines and fees as an income stream. And these homeowners do not have a voice. And that is what Chippy is all about, is giving a voice to the homeowners, whether they love their association or not, but to give them a voice so that they can speak out and gauge, you know, communicate their level of satisfaction or dissatisfaction. and what factors contribute to either one of those factors.
We also want to hear from people who do like their associations and why they like their associations. We're not
exactly
out there fishing, unlike CAI, who's out there looking for people to say, oh, well, we're just so happy, happy, happy.
Drink the Kool-Aid. Drink
yeah.
the Kool-Aid.
But we, you know, if you are happy, tell us. I don't believe you, but tell us. And we'll put it out there, but the thing is, we want to know the truth. We want to know the truth. We've got to know the truth, because we've made no, in all of the years that I've been involved in this, we've made no advances towards protecting the homeowners. It just gets worse and worse and worse because it's so out of whack. I mean, the power is so, so out of whack, despite the fact that there are many more homeowners.
Right.
They
I
don't
think
have the
there
rest.
Are people that are genuinely content and satisfied. You know, they love their associations. And I would say ignorance is bliss. Not to be stayed or trite, but that is quite true. Ignorance is bliss.
It is, and yeah, as long as it's not involving them personally,
mm-hmm.
it's like, sure, you don't understand, we don't have a problem. Oh, maybe my neighbor does, but we don't have a problem in my association. So you're not, you know, we're just going to shrug that off. It's gone.
I've talked to a number of owners in the past several months to a year that have told me they've lived in their association for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And everything was fine until it wasn't fine. And all of a sudden, something happens. You know, a dispute comes up over, you know, an improvement they wanted to make to their front yard. They get somebody new on the board. They get a new management company. Some kind of a disaster happens. There's a fire. There's, you know, they find out that there's a major damage that needs to be repaired, and now there's a special assessment. These are the kind of issues, as soon as there's some kind of a stressor that is introduced into the community, that's when the problems seem to occur and sometimes spiral out of control. Unlike your city or your local government that can weather those sorts of things without falling apart. A lot of associations are living on tenuous financial ground. And as soon as there's a problem, you know, a fire, a natural disaster, something comes up like in Virginia, I know that they've had in the River Towers condominium, all of a sudden there were people that their whole building shook, and if they found out that the support columns for the portico had been rusted out from years of water infiltration, dropped the building a couple inches, and now there's 32 units that are vacant, and it's going to take the owners another, you know, 6 months or so to be able to return to their units.
If they're lucky, yeah.
Yeah, and the question is, are there insurance policies going to cover this? Because this is kind of an unusual circumstance. The insurance companies may not consider this a covered loss, either for the association or for the individual. And so, you know, this is a big problem and challenge. And these kinds of challenges are being increasingly faced by associations across the country and really in other countries as well. As they age, as the infrastructure is aging and getting older, because if there's been years and years of inappropriate or inadequate maintenance of components, you can have these major failures or sudden failures, and you might not have the association often doesn't have the resources, the financial resources, to take care of it.
And we know, based on the company in out there in California that does reserve studies, that 72% of associations that they examine are underfunded. So your chances of buying into an underfunded association or living in one is 72%.
Yeah.
And that's astronomical. So if Debbie's talking about natural disasters like, you know, hurricanes and earthquakes and fires and all of that, the one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, which she mentioned is infrastructure's age, is the looming specter of special assessments. And what I've been seeing on average lately is anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 per unit owner in a building that's over 40 years old.
That's a lot. So why are we not building things that are better constructed? Why are we...
Well, everything has an estimated economic life or a remaining useful life. It used to be a refrigerator lasted for 20 years. Now they're expected to last maybe six. Same thing with roofing, with plumbing, electrical, your elevator cabs, your sidewalks, your retention ponds, your roads, your storm systems. They all have an estimated economic life. And when those things wear out, if you don't fund for them up front, the owners at the back end are going to be paying out of their pockets for what the previous owners used up. And if you have, and most board members, since they're volunteers, they do not know what they're doing. They're not accustomed to running corporations, be they for-profit or non-for-profit. Any way you look at it, it's a corporation. It has to be self-sustaining. And you have people that, in many cases, cannot balance their own checkbooks, much less fund reserves for the future for things like roofs and storm systems.
And that's where a lot of this whole concept comes crashing down. Because
exactly.
Now you have to belong to these things. You have to pay for it. You're on the hook for it. And it's someone who doesn't know their elbow from a hole in the ground who's going to make that determination. We're also allowing developers to build things that are not going to last. We're using garbage to, you know, going back to the cardboard and scotch tape housing. And it's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. It's
and
a disgrace.
ABC News just had an investigative report on, you know, the poor quality of new construction, the prevalence of construction defects, and the fact that if owners wanted to get together and do a class action lawsuit to fight against these large developers, they're not able to do so because in the sales contracts with both the owners and with the associations, there's a clause for mandatory arbitration to resolve any claims for construction defects. So, you know, owners don't even have the right to have a jury trial or to do a class action. And, of course, once they're involved in an arbitration, and the ABC News investigative report uncovered this, they actually interviewed an arbitrator, a former arbitrator, who says, you know, the deck is stacked.
Yeah.
These arbitrators make money working for developers,
yeah,
essentially. You know,
yeah,
they're not actually necessarily neutral. And once the decision is made, it's binding. It can't be appealed. Whereas if this was something that was going into court and there was something overlooked or that you felt was unfair, you have the right of appeal, but not so with binding arbitration.
Well, arbitrators don't have to know the law. They don't have to be attorneys. They just are there. Homeowners believe, and there are a lot of homeowners out there who are pushing for binding arbitration, which is stupid. And will not listen to reason. They just absolutely, positively will not listen. The fact is that they say, well, you can choose your arbitrator, yes. How often are you going to be in a position where you're going to need an arbitrator? And how often is the association or the developer going to be in that position? The arbitrator is going to find for the person who's going to be hiring them more often, because there's a self-interest over there. And the deck is stacked against them. And the other thing that I don't like is that it's no cheaper to go through arbitration than it is to go to court, because you have to go through all the same motions and collect mm-hmm. all the same data and stuff. But now the records are sealed, so it goes back to your transparency that we were talking about at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm. You know, a consumer has no way to find out that a particular association or that a lot of homeowners in an association have had an arbitration settlement. There's no way for them to know, that there was issues other than, you know, knocking on people's doors and saying, hey, have you had problems with this and that? But even on that measure, the homeowner who is involved in the settlement usually has a gag order. They can't discuss the merits of the claims. They can't discuss what the settlement was, you know, whether it was good, bad, indifferent. So a consumer is really walking in blind without knowing that these problems exist.
And you're a homeowner who's paying for stuff for the misdeeds of a board member or for the misdeeds of what a developer has done and left with the association, and you're not allowed to know what you're paying for.
No.
And you're not allowed to know what you're paying for.
That kind of gets to the point of, you guys know I'm a real estate broker.
Right.
And one of the things I tell my
clients... I wasn't going
to
mention it, Sarah, but yeah.
Oops. It's the cat's out of the bag. But one of the things I tell my clients, in addition to gathering, you know, all of the material I possibly can prior to purchase, you know, the bylaws, the budgets, the declaration, the board minutes, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the key pieces of information or advice I give my clients is I want you to go and spend time there, and preferably on a weekend, and talk to as many owners as you possibly can. And if you are lucky enough, try to attend a board meeting to get a feel for how it's run and what the sentiment is. And I have had so many clients call me back after purchase and tell me, thank you so much for giving me that advice. Because it really helps them get a gauge on whether this is a good or great association or it's one that you want to run away from while your hair is on fire.
Right.
But the thing is, I mean, it may be good right now, but a new board, a new management company, a new attorney, it's all going to turn around. So you can't really hang your hat on that information. I mean, it's good
True.
For the time
True.
Being, but understand that it's not going to last.
Not, and that's one of the most frightening issues,
yeah.
is that right now they might be pet-friendly, they
yes.
might be rent-friendly, but it can change almost overnight.
Yes.
And as long as the consumer knows that going in the door, that's fine. Most people only live in their homes for about 5 to 7 years. Of course, with the recession, you know, things were a little bit longer. But, you know, they can look at it, they can telescope, I'm going to be here 5 years or 7 years, or maybe I'll be here 20 years. But as long as they know up front that things can change in a heartbeat, that they might lose the right to have a pet, they might lose the right to rent their unit. Those are things, and the rules, other rules can just change arbitrarily.
And assessments are going to go up. You can count on it. Assessments are going to go up, and they may go up substantially.
But the thing, too, is so you think, all right, I'm here, I'm on a job, I'm here for 5 years, I'm going to buy this, so I will go in, and I think, okay, I can handle this for 5 years, and everything is going to be okay. And at the end of 5 years, things start going downhill, but it's okay because I'm going to get out of here. I'm leaving, my job is over with. But the problem is, you may be getting out of there. The problem is still there. And you're just going to transfer that to someone else. And that's what we're looking at. That's what I keep thinking. All right, so I got out of it. But if I sold my place to Debbie or to Sarah, they're going to have to deal with this. And that's not fair.
You're absolutely right.
So the problem's going to be there. And, you know, you hate to think that you're dumping this on somebody else, but that's in essence what we're doing. Is, hello, I'm out of here. Hey, it's cool. I survived.
Well, it's important to understand that almost all associations are corporations with very few exceptions. And as a corporation, you know, CAI for a couple of years there was saying, you know, they have to be run as a business. They have to be run as a business. If you look at the lifespan of a corporation or a business, it's not, very few of them last for more than a generation. Quite a few fail. Or they are taken over by another group and they change their entire focus or outlook. And I've seen that happen with a lot of associations, too. You know, unlike a regular city or a town or a neighborhood, all neighborhoods are going to go through phases and changes where you're going to have maybe a family-oriented neighborhood, and in 10 years, those kids will have grown up and moved out, and now it's becoming an older neighborhood. And then, you know, in a few years after that, you might find some more younger families moving in. But the overall governance remains fairly stable. But in a lot of communities, especially multifamily housing for condominiums and townhouses, what you see happening over time is that owners will leave. Some of them will sell their properties. Others may just rent their properties out. Or they'll sell to somebody who is buying it not to live in the unit but to rent it. And so over the years, what was once a residential community for owner occupants becomes more and more of a rental community owned by investors. And that changes the entire flavor of the community.
Debbie, you are absolutely right, and I had never thought of it that way before in terms of the lifespan of a corporation. As an appraiser for the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, I had to estimate the economic life of neighborhoods. So on average, your economic life of a neighborhood might be 70, 75 years, you know, a lifetime. But you have, HUD always wanted to see the economic life of at least 40 years on the appraisal report, the remaining economic life. Because what happens in these communities is, it's like the face of a clock. It's 6 o'clock, let's say that's birth. And then you go through rapid growth, 9 o'clock. 12 o'clock is stabilization. When you get around to 3 o'clock, now you're going through blight, decline, and then your burnouts and your board-ups. And then you come back to 6 o'clock again. But you do have an economic life cycle of a neighborhood. And combined with the corporations, I think you make a very good point.
Yeah, because corporations don't last anywhere near as long as a neighborhood in general.
Well, some do, some don't. But, yeah, and I think that, I don't think that these things are designed to last. I think they're designed to turn over.
They're planned obsolescence.
Yeah, it absolutely is planned obsolescence. They're they're built substandardly, and the whole concept, the whole way of doing business with these things, is just a means of sucking the money out of your wallet as much as they can before they watch the house collapse around your ears and kick you out. And then they redevelop it because everything's getting smaller and more expensive. And that gives local municipalities more tax income, tax dollars, and you're stuck with it. So.
Well, take a look at what's going on across the country now with golf communities. I mean, golf communities are kind of a two-layer thing. You have the planned community, and then you have the separate entity, the golf course. And in many cases, the golf course is owned, it's a for-profit organization that's owned sometimes by the developer, sometimes by, you know, people who are in the golf business who later purchase that, you know, the country club from the developer. But now with waning interest in golf, there's a lot of golf course closures across the country. And the question is now, what do we do with that land? And there's, you know, a big conflict all across the country as to whether they should be redeveloped, you know, whether, and if so, how, or if the local municipality should take over that land and use it for a drainage field, whether the owners should get together and decide to purchase the golf course from the golf course owner, you know, which is usually, it's usually a money losing prospect for the owners going forward. But these are the kinds of hard decisions that are being made.
And 20 years ago, I had Wayne Hyatt on who said that all of the recreational amenities were not particularly wanted. People didn't want them. But we kept building them because it was a sales technique. Ladies, I think we're almost out of time, but before we go, Debbie, I would like you to give out your web address again and let people know how they can access the survey, because we want you all to answer the survey. It'll take 10 minutes of your time. If you don't live in an HOA, never have lived in an HOA, but you have friends or family who do, please send it to them and ask them to fill it out. We do want to hear from you. So, Debbie, okay. You want to do that?
Yes, it's independentamericancommunities.com, all one word, independentamericancommunities.com. And it's right at the top of the page. You just click on the link, and within that link, then you'll see a big orange click here to take the survey. Just click on that, and that's all there is to it. Also, from the home page of my blog on the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see that there is a contact form in case anybody has any questions. You can contact me by email if there's any questions regarding the survey or anything else.
Thanks, Debbie.
And I'd also like to mention that Shu, your listeners can go to chippy.org, which is chppi.org, to see the results of the previous survey and or to leave comments. And our prior survey, we had over more than 330 responses, and our goal with this survey is to get at least 1,000 responses across the country.
Okay, guys, so you have work to do. And before we go, Sarah, would you like to tell us a little bit about your book? Sarah, you know,
well,
these ladies are very accomplished, and Sarah's a published author with an incredible book. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, thank you, Shu. It's basically all the many, many lessons that we've learned since the first book came out just a couple of years ago. That was only in 2014. And since that time, we were reporting primarily on reports that had been published in the media. And since then, having become somewhat of a lightning rod, like you and like Debbie, for homeowners that are stressed out or have problems, the knowledge base has grown tremendously. So that's what we're going to be putting in the next edition. And I heard a really great quote. I think it was maybe Frank Baum, who wrote The Wizard of Oz, which was a political commentary for its time.
back in the 1930s, and he said, knowledge is the one thing that you can never be robbed of.
I like that. So tell us the name of your first book.
Escaping Times of Jail.
Thank you.
Navigating the risks and surviving the perils of the carefree community lifestyle.
I love it. So definitely worth a read. Ladies, thank you so very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Shu. Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks a lot.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.